May my words and our thinking be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, as we meet this morning here in Hambledon Church on Remembrance Sunday, what is it that we are individually and corporately pausing to remember? For each one of us, it may be something or someone different that comes to mind. Remembrance is a hugely significant time. Rowan Williams, former Archbishop of Canterbury, writes, "Our annual acts of remembrance are important because they give space for the affirmation of ordinary lives from a century ago, give dignity to those who had so little of it acknowledged in their own lifetimes. Remembrance helps us to grasp the colossal significance of naming and honouring the largely voiceless dead." And today we honour, among many others, two of our own dear friends and members of the Royal British Legion, whom we have lost this year. Arthur Wheeler, born during the First World War and who spent the 5 years of the Second World War in India, supporting the Burma campaign. And Tom Bird, born 3 months before that first armistice was signed, veteran of the Second World War's Alamein and Desert War campaigns, and whose bravery in battle earned him the DSO and MC. Arthur and Tom may come under the category of ordinary people, but to us they are extraordinary people, and they leave gaps in our lives. Arthur and Tom both led long lives, and as we look back along those lives, and as part of our remembering today, we see that, as a recent Radio 4 programme put it, we are not disconnected from that past, because remembrance helps us to form our identity. One of the gravest mistakes we can do is to forget. We can't think forward without thinking backwards. Thinking back to the poem For the Fallen by Lawrence Binyon, which we heard earlier in this service, the poet could not possibly have been thinking this far forwards when he wrote those words that have been passed on from generation to generation as we remember the fallen each year. The poem was written surprisingly early in the First World War and published in the Times newspaper in September 1914, as news of the casualties and retreat at Mons started to filter through. When this poem was written, 1 million men from both sides had not been slaughtered at the Battle of the Somme. When this poem was written, the bloody Battle of Passchendaele, whose centenary we commemorate this year, had not been fought. The 500,000 dead that Passchendaele claimed had not been mourned. The 90,000 bodies that were never identified still lived. The 42,000 soldiers that were never recovered had not yet been swallowed up in liquid mud. And yet, Lawrence Binyon's poem is almost prophetic in the way it points forward to the losses that were to come. He gives voice to the voiceless dead, whose faceless numbers we struggle to comprehend, while giving us a way to remember them. Nigel Steele, principal historian for the Imperial War Museum, explains the appeal of For the Fallen. He says, "Its smooth, rhythmic flow and formal, elegant language embody the profound sense of respect, admiration and grief that hangs over modern acts of collective remembrance." Yet this poem was not written by a soldier who had seen action, but by a civilian less than a month after the start of the fighting. Born in Lancaster in 1869, Lawrence Binyon was keeper of Oriental prints and drawings at the British Museum, and an established and well-respected scholar, poet and author. Aged 45, he was too old to enlist, but in 1915 he volunteered as an orderly with the French hospital services. On the eve of another world war, in August 1939, on Lawrence Binyon's 70th birthday, he explained that the idea for his most famous poem came to him on a clifftop at Polzeth in Cornwall. Having visited the clifftops only this year and seen the plaque that sits where Binyon sat, high on the rocks overlooking the Cornish coastline, I thought how this must have been almost as far away from the muddy, bloody battlefields of France and Flanders as you could get. The wind that rifled through the clifftop grass, so unlike the rifling that took place across the sea. The turquoise waves that crashed and burst on the black rocks, so unlike the crash and scream of the shells that split the Flanders air. And I wonder, did the rhythm of the waves inspire the rhythm of those well-known words? Lawrence Binyon had explained, the well-known fourth stanza, "They shall not grow old," was written first, and it dictated the rhythmical movement of the whole poem. It is this sombre, repetitive rhythm that invests this verse with such enduring power when read aloud in public. Several years ago, a letter from a retired colonel appeared in the Church Times about how this poem is read in public. The colonel wrote, 30 years ago, I was parade marshal at the annual Act of Remembrance, and the mayor was a formidable lady who had piloted transport aircraft in the Second World War. She took me to one side and explained that, as a young woman, she had met Lawrence Binyon, who had told her how frustrating he found it when people chanted his words without feeling and the meaning that he had intended. People mumbling, "We will remember them," making the final word almost inaudible, annoyed him intensely. Binyon taught her how to pronounce his ode of remembrance. The essence is in the relationship between they and we. They shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Lawrence Binyon died in Reading in 1943, having written poetry that spanned two world wars. But his words have not died with him. His words still impact us today and have a particular impact on those who have served or continue to serve in more recent times. My son-in-law, Tim, formerly a captain with the Royal Logistics Corps, said that Binyon's ode to remembrance make the hairs on the back of his neck stand up. Tim, as a young man of 24, was deployed to Afghanistan for 8 months in 2011, and during that time heard these words at about 20 remembrance services. They were not remembrance services as we know them, but the ones that take place when service personnel are killed while on active duty. Camp Bastion was the main hub. When anyone died, a message would be given over the tannoy and thousands of people would immediately down tools and assemble in the central area, which served as a parade ground. There would be no hymns, no order of service, simply prayers and words led by the padre, citations from the deceased's regiment, and silence. Sometimes multiple casualties were being remembered. If the fatalities had occurred at one of the smaller outlying patrol bases, made up of 30 to 100 people, a padre was flown in to support them. Here, Tim said, it was much harder. If the person killed had been working with you, doing the exact job that you do, or if you were there when your fellow soldiers were killed, you would know their story, and the grieving was much deeper and much more emotional. And so, at Bastion, in the heat and dust of the Afghan desert, again so distant from those green grassy clifftops where Binyon wrote the words of remembrance, men and women would gather to remember, to say goodbye, as another of their friends was lost to them. They would gather alongside a simple cross made of brass shell casings by a wall of remembrance, where names of the fallen were carved. And in the midst of the horror and the chaos, Jesus stood there among them. He stood amongst the men and women with heads bowed, interconnected as friends. Force's life is not perfect, but it works because of that interconnection with one another, rather like the intertwined vine and the branches Jesus speaks of in the verses that come just before the Bible reading we heard this morning. And Jesus issues a command, the command that underpins all relationships, all friendships, the command to all of us to love one another and to remain, to abide, intertwined in his love, because he, Jesus, has acted out and will act out the greatest thing that love can do. And Jesus is the most tenacious of friends. He pursues, questions, suffers, and rejoices in all of us, those he calls friends, and calls us to do the same. He stood among those in Flanders, and he stood among those at Cambastian. He stands with us here this morning. Jesus also calls us to go and bear fruit, and I reflected on that this week. There is no glory in war. It is brutal, horrific. So what kind of fruit do we bear from remembrance? It is said that history reminds us to remember to think better. And perhaps part of thinking better and its fruit is how we pass our faith and our history and the fruit of our remembering onto future generations. We have a future generation at Barney's, our toddler group, where our faith, our history and our remembering were particularly important this week as we made poppies. They were not the usual kind of poppies, as they were made by tiny 2- and 3-year-olds with help, out of red cupcake cases and green straws. But the children were very happy with the results, and you can see their contribution to today's service in a small basket on the font. Do have a look at them as you go by. These are the children of the tomorrows, for whom our fallen gave their todays. And as we remember before God the fallen today, and how we are to go and bear fruit, we are also met with the challenge of remembering to use our freedom and our lives wisely. Then we can all, in faith and honesty, say of the falling, we will remember them. Amen.